Welcome to Don't Give Up on Testicular Cancer, a podcast where testicular cancer survivors, caregivers, and others who have navigated the cancer journey share their stories. The podcast comes to you from the Max Mallory Foundation, a nonprofit family foundation focused on educating about testicular cancer in honor and in memory of Max Mallory, who died in 2016. At the young age of 22, from testicular cancer. Had he survived, Max wanted to help young adults with cancer. This podcast helps meet that goal. Here now is your host, Joy Slofstrom, Max's mom and a young adult cancer survivor.
Hi, this is Joyce, and with me today is Chris Smith, who is a native of Lexington, Kentucky. He moved to North Carolina when he was a sophomore in high school and now lives close to Asheville and in a state with more than 65,000 people with cancer, according to estimates from the American Cancer Society. In 2019, this father of three learned he had advanced testicular cancer at age 39. He survived after 24 sessions of chemotherapy, followed by high-dose chemo and a stem cell transplant, which he will tell us about as we get going in our podcast. He helps others who are navigating cancer with visits twice a month to Pardee Hospital, where he received treatment in Hendersonville, North Carolina. He talks with patients and delivers snacks and warm blankets to them. His reassuring presence has made a massive difference to the people he visits. He is a successful real estate entrepreneur and owns Modern Mountain Real Estate. He will also be giving back to testicular cancer with a golf tournament his company has sponsored for the last 3 years. All the proceeds of that event will go to benefit cancer patients. So, Chris, thanks for being here.
You're welcome, Joyce. Thanks for inviting me on.
Well, I always begin by asking my guests to just tell us a little bit about their story with testicular cancer. So why don't you begin, and what happened with you and anything you want to share with us?
Yeah, it kind of really started in about January of 2019. I started noticing, some differences in my body. I'm a pretty active individual, work out a lot, play basketball. You know, I like to be on the go. And I just noticed, within a very short time frame, that my energy was starting to go down. I wasn't able to, it kind of progressed over a few months. So January, I noticed a lump on my testicle and actually reached out to my urologist about it. And he told me that I was probably feeling my vasectomy that I had done and kind of told me not to worry about it. And, I did and not worry about it. And a few months later, these symptoms kind of started really progressing, where, within a 2-week period, I noticed that whatever I was lifting, I was struggling to get. I had a burning pain down in my testicle region. My lower back was really hurting. My appetite started to decrease. I felt hungry. I'd start eating, then I couldn't eat. Just all things that just did not add up. So, I got on the computer and I started doing a little Google search and I came across testicular cancer. And, I had about 15 symptoms that they listed off, and I felt like I checked 12 of them.
Oh, boy.
And so then I called again a urologist, and this time I called him on, it was a Wednesday, and I said, look, I need to come in. Something's not right. I'm going to get in there. So I got in the next day on Thursday and walked in, and I told him, I was like, hey, I think I got testicular cancer. And again, he was like, it's probably, an infected tube or something like that, but here, we'll draw some blood and we'll see what's going on. Well, it was Thursday. By Wednesday, I was in surgery.
Okay.
To remove my testicle and to put a stent in my left kidney because I had a tumor on the outside of my kidney that was about the size of a softball, and it was shutting my kidney down. And that's where that lower back pain was coming from. So from that surgery, I met with my oncologist within a handful of days. Dr. Anthony and Party Hospital in Hendersonville. Love that man. So, So I met with him. He told me. Told me what I had. Pretty advanced, stage 3C, I think is what they call it. I'd already progressed to my lungs. I had it in both lungs. I had that tumor on my kidney. Thankfully, it hadn't got to my brain yet. But, you know, he told me. He said, you know, Chris, I'm not going to beat around the bush. Just the treatment for testicular cancer is, it's a rough one. You know, the combination of drugs is a hard one. It's you know, going to be the hardest thing you've ever done. But he said, you know, you are in probably the best shape out of any patient I've ever had in here. He said, so if anybody can take it, then I feel like you can. And I had my one night of feeling sorry for myself and got my tears out. And then the next day, it switched my mind and it became just a battle at that point, one that I felt like I could win. And, you know, I began the treatment there and, you know, my numbers were starting to go down and, you know, everything seemed to be working. I had 3 more treatments to go. Then all of a sudden my numbers spiked back up. And that's when they chose to cease the treatment at that point. My wife had already found Dr. Einhorn in Indiana, which is, you all know,
right,
kind of the godfather of testicular cancer. So, you know, we had already kind of, initiated the conversation with him. And then once my numbers spiked back up, you know, we reached out to him and told him what was going on. And, you know, he asked if I could come up there and visit him. So I did. You know, they ran me through a bunch of blood work. And then he came in and sat down with me and, you know, he told me what the next step would be, and, you know, which included the stem cell transplant and, you know, the high-dose chemo. And, but, you know, it's funny, at the beginning of this year, 2019, the newly elected president had removed the penalty for not having health insurance. I had gone to my regular doctor and at the end of 2018, and he's like, you're healthy as a horse. You know, I'll see you in a few years. So I dropped my insurance because I was like,
Chris,
let's save a couple $100 a month here, right? And it was silly, but, you know, not like I needed to, but at the same time, I was like, why do it, right? And so I went through all this initial stuff without having any insurance. And when I went up there, you know, this was in October, they told me, they were like, look, you know, we got to get you back on insurance, you know, otherwise, you know, you're going to have to give us a deposit of $100,000 to even get this going. And so that I did, you know, thankfully, you know, with what President Obama had done, and, you know, I couldn't be denied. So, you know, I got back on the insurance, got back on the Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and got a really good plan. And Indiana was absolutely amazing as far as helping to submit what was needed to them. I had to go up in January and do a 5-round treatment. It was like VOIP, I think is what Dr. Einhorn called it. And it was like a combination of like 3, and it was just to kind of slow things down. So I went there in January and you know, they would administer every 20 hours, they would start a round of chemo, and the round would take three hours to get in. So really it was kind of like every 17 hours you were getting hooked right back up. So I took five of those and then came home, because it took about a whole another month or so, about 2 months, for them to get everything straightened out with Blue Cross and Blue Shield and get me lined up. Well, when a week arrives for me to go up there, we got this thing called the coronavirus that just shut our country down. And I literally checked in to the hospital the day that everything just boom went, you know, froze, right? And which meant now no guests. You know, I had buddies who were gonna come and see me and, you know, family. And so that, you know, that wasn't allowed, you know, so now, you know, you get to go do all this by yourself. So I went there and I did the stem cell and then went back the next day and took a high dose, and I was there for, you know, 2 weeks, got a week break, I had to stay in Indianapolis. My wife was able to come up, and, you know, we just stayed in the hotel and ordered takeout and walked around downtown Indianapolis because it was a ghost town. And the hardest one was, you know, the first round was, you know, it is what it is. The hardest one was going back in for that second round. You know, you kind of get a taste of freedom and you know what's in store for you. And so then I had to go back in. And that second cycle was harder just because I was ready to come home. So, but either way, got through all that and everything seemed to work. My numbers were all down. And then I went back to India. I got to come home for a month and went back. And then I did a 9.5 hour surgery. They took my kidney out. They scraped my lymph nodes, and then they removed 12 tumors off of my right lung, all in one surgery.
Oh, boy.
And then, yeah, I spent the next about 5-6 days in the hospital. They told me the only way I could get out is if I could walk around the floor I was on twice. So once they told me that, I committed to start walking and get out of there. And my wife's uncle, you know, he means a lot to me. He drove from Arizona to Indianapolis to pick me up because I could not fly. It just hurt too much and I couldn't sit up that long. He had an SUV and put a little blow up mattress in the back for me and drove me all the way down to Asheville. And it was a little rough 9 hour ride, but got home and then the process of repairing began. And, you know, it was one of those things where you set goals. First goal was just to walk to the end of my driveway. And then it was to, you know, walk to my neighbor's mailbox. And I just kept looking at the next mailbox and the next mailbox until I could, you know, get down the street and back. And been blessed and fortunate enough to be able to, you know, get back to where... You know, I'm not what I used to be, but I'm okay with that. You know, I just played basketball today with some buddies at the gym, and you know, I'm back to hiking with my dog and with my wife, and you know, living a normal life.
Yeah. You know,
except for every few months where, like Monday, it's my yearly CT scan, and I still have to go do blood work every few months, and every few months I get scared to death, to be honest.
Yeah, no, I understand that too.
You know, it's one of those things where you've heard, you know, and you've read about it coming back and relapsing, and you know you're not really through it until you get to that 5 year mark. And even then, I don't think I'll ever, you know, not be scared when it's time to go visit. So, well, that's it.
Well, gosh, I have a couple of questions. So, from the time it sounds like you noticed in January of 2019 the pain and so forth, and then you waited and went back, and so, and then it sounds like you went to Indiana in October for the first time. It was like January to when you first went back to that urologist to find out.
Yeah, so January is when I really kind of felt it, and it really only took about another, actually, it was like maybe the latter part of February. I mean, it took about another 6 weeks where just pain and just, and I'm the kind, I go to yoga, you know, once a week, and, you know, I was going and getting massages on my back. God, something just is not right, you know, and just was not adding up. And then it was the difference when, you know, I used to do bench pressing and stuff like that. And, but, you know, literally within a 2 week period, what I was doing 12 times, I was only able to do 4 times. And that's when I'm like, something is going wrong, you know, inside my body here.
Well, the reason I ask that is you have to be your own advocate. And it sounds like you did that, which is great. And, you know, listen to your body. And that's the thing I've learned about this disease and talking to so many men and kind of what would happen with Max. But, you know, it progresses quickly. And I mean, cancer does, I guess, in general. But I mean, it's, if you think something's wrong, like you did, you have to really go check it out. So that's wonderful that you did. And the whole thing with COVID and that timing for the high dose chemo, and that's, It's a involved long process, that high dose chemo. So I applaud you for, you had no choice. You had to go through it alone, but I mean, that's hard, Chris. I mean, geez.
It was, you know, but I wasn't the only one on that hall.
Right.
I definitely spoke to a few other people that, you know, who were going through the same thing, or not, you know, not the same exact thing, but, you know, they had the same feelings. And, you know, it kind of created a little bit of a bond with some of these people as we're all kind of in the same boat together. You know, I was not the kind to eat the hospital food. I had like Whole Foods delivering me food, and
yeah.
I had pretty much a pantry going on in my room. Even the doctor walked in one time, it's like, holy cow, man. But of course you get to a point where you can't even eat that, you know, nothing
right,
tastes good.
Right.
And so I was giving food away to some other people and some other guys there and stuff like that. And so, yeah, I mean, it was certainly tough. It was not easy to do it alone.
Yeah. You mentioned that your wife had been researching and found Dr. Einhorn at Indiana. So talk a little bit about the support that you received from your family. And your uncle came and got you, or your wife's uncle. I mean, I think that's so important for people to hear and know that that's an important part of recovery.
Oh, I mean, it was essential, you know. Fortunate enough to where I do work for myself, but I still tried to work. I mean, I was meeting clients, and, you know, obviously some days I was able to do more than others. But, you know, you mentioned the golf tournament. It actually started on my behalf without me knowing. You know, these people put it together for me, completely surprised me. And, you know, I had, you know, friends who would bring food over, and, you know, family stopping through, and it was essential. You know, my ex-wife, she was just there for one of my first treatments. And, you know, so, I mean, we, to have that, to have my wife around, and to have, you know, her mom would stop in, my mom would stop in, you know, boys while I'm laid up on the couch, and, you know, just to sit with me, you know, one of my best friends who's living in Virginia Beach, he came down for, you know, some of my first treatments, and just to sit there for a week, you know, and be
right
with me. But it's, you know, to feel that love, it's also part of it, I think, what drives you to fight, drives you not give up, is, you know, seeing all of these people and getting the messages and stuff of that nature, you know, just kind of reinforces, you know, your place in the world and wanting to be here still.
Well, and I know the article I read in the news report with your local news said that the doctors told you had a 20% chance of survival, but your response back was really good, which is 20% is better than zero. So to me, that says a lot about your attitude, your positive approach to all of this.
That was Dr. Einhorn when I went up there in October. I didn't tell anybody that, actually. My wife heard it, which I wish she hadn't, you know, because if she hadn't been sitting there, I wouldn't have told her either. But I didn't tell my boys, you know, I've got three boys. I didn't tell them. I didn't tell anybody. I asked her not to tell anybody either, because not everybody can take that approach, you know, everybody will. You know, you'll get people who instead will look at you in sympathy. And I just didn't want that, you know.
Right.
I'd rather people look at me as, you know, and gain some sort of strength or some sort of, you know, realize, you know, that kind of where you're at in life might not be that bad after all, if you know what I mean. I don't know.
Right,
I didn't want the pity party. I've always kind of been a believer that mind over matter. You know, I believe that if you set your mind on the right path and you keep a positive attitude, you know, good things will come. It's not to say that you're not going to work hard to get there, but I've always been a believer that, you know, if you keep your mind in the right place. I was raised in the church by my grandmother when I was younger, and, you know, certainly strayed away from the path, you know, over the course of life, you know, but this experience certainly brought me back closer to my faith and, you know, forced me to have, you know, to kind of have a little look in the mirror and kind of think about how I was living. And maybe I wasn't quite fully appreciating all the little things in life. And this this change up for me, you know. I mean, back to appreciating the sunrise and the sunset, you know, enjoy the fog as it rolls through the mountains, you know, just every little thing that you kind of just start to glaze over as you get caught up in the hustle and bustle of life, you now see in a different light again.
Yep, I agree with that 100%. It's kind of living in the moment. I've always found that hard to do, but I've also noticed, like you're saying, things you take for granted that are there every day. Like when I walk my dogs, the trees and the color and things you don't really notice until you start to think about it. So I understand that. What do you think was your biggest challenge with the cancer diagnosis and the treatment, the whole process?
Being forced to not do anything, you know?
Okay.
It took away. I'm a member of the YMCA. You know, we play it. I'm now over 35. We play in what's called the Legends Basketball League, where it's just, you know, a good group of men who are 35 and up playing a little half-court basketball for some cardio. I miss that. You know, I missed being able to go and do things with my boys. I missed, you know, we'll play paintball or, you know, go to a movie or whatever it might be that they, you know, do. You know, hiking with my dog. I mean, I live in just one of the most beautiful places in the country, and not being able to really get out and enjoy it, you know, just being not able to work. I mean, I right. enjoy working. I mean, work is my career, is something that I enjoy. I don't really feel like it's work because I enjoy doing it. I enjoy meeting people. So really, I mean, that was it. You know, I mean, of course, you know, with the, you know, the actual chemo in itself, you know, when you trying to get enough water in your body, that's, you know, that's the physical aspects of it that were some of the hardest for me. Even though, you know, I love water, I felt you just could not drink enough of it. But, you know, yeah, just being relegated to my couch and why, you know, not having the energy to do anything, that was hard for me. Because, you know, if you ask my wife, you know, we'll go on a vacation and I'm good for about 2 days of relaxing and I'm ready to go. So, you know, that's a hard thing for me. And I would go in for chemo. I wanted to walk in, and you know, it got to a point where it was very hard to do. And nurse Renee, who I love to death, and you know, she came up to me and she kind of scolded me a little bit. I was like, Chris, I understand. And I know, you know, but you want to walk. It's a pride thing. I get it. But if you fall down, it's going to be a bigger issue for me. So sit your butt in this wheelchair and let me roll you in here. You know, but that's a hard thing for me to do. It was a hard thing for me to accept. Yeah.
So the other thing when I read about you was what you do at the hospital. It's Pardee Hospital in Hendersonville, and you go twice a month and visit with patients and kind of help them out. Talk a little bit about what you do and how that's affected just your recovery.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was one of the things that when I got through and I was dying, it was something that immediately I wanted to get into, because, you know, there were a lot of times where I was in there by myself during my treatment, you know, and to have the pastor walk around or to have, you know, this volunteer come in, you know, even just to speak to you for a few minutes. I'm a social kind of butterfly, so I like that. I need that. And, you know, the uplifting words and just the help that they gave me, it meant something. And, you know, so I go, you know, and again, it's only twice a month because of, you know, I still got work and a lot of other things to do. But I love to see the nurses, you know, I love to see my doctor, I love to see them and just walk around. And, you know, everybody handles it differently. And you can see, you know, the kind of deer in the headlight look when you know you've got somebody who's kind of in there for the first time. You see the people who are struggling and it's hard. And, you know, I don't force my story upon anybody, but, you know, when we start talking, you know, I do tell them, you know, and I let them know that, you know, I was only given a 20% chance and here I am, you know, and my hope with that is to help give them that strength, even if it is just for that day, you know, give them that hope that they can too survive. So, I mean, it means something to me because I feel like I'm kind of passing on some hope that I was given by my friends and family, and the strength I got from them. I'm trying to pass it on to them a little bit.
Right, yeah. How about, what advice would you give to other guys who might think they have testicular cancer or going through treatment? Any advice?
I mean, like you said, you got to be your own advocate. I mean, I don't think about it a lot, but I've certainly thought about it a couple times. You know, like when I felt that lump, had I been more forceful at that point in time, maybe I could have prevented it from getting to my lungs. You know, maybe I could have prevented the tumor from, you know, on my kidney from, you know, causing it to have to be removed. You know, the process certainly taught me to that you are your best advocate and you know your body better than anybody. So don't be afraid to voice what you think. You know, I met with a doctor in Chapel Hill when I knew I needed to do the high dose chemo. I went there, UNC, and I walked out of there just not feeling great about it. You know, I didn't think, I kind of felt like I was just a number to him. And then I went and met Dr. Einhorn, and I felt loved and I felt cared for, and, you know, I felt like he was invested. And so I think that's okay. You know, I don't think that you need to, if you don't have the feelings, you know, the good feelings, good vibes from somebody, go find somebody else. You know, when I went in there for my high dose chemo, the first round of it, I started to get these headaches, and I knew what it was from. It's from the dehydration. You know, I just couldn't get, you know, enough fluids in me. And I asked for an IV, and their response was to walk in with an OxyContin. And I was like, what is this? And they told me, and I was like, go get the doctor. And they went and got the doctor. And I said, look, put it in your charts right now. Do not ever bring that in my room. You know, I do not want to ever take one of those. I was like, I know what it is. The headaches up front. I'm dehydrated. Give me a bag of fluid. Let's see what happens. And sure enough, they put me on a bag of fluid. Headaches went away. And I walked around with a bag of fluid for the rest of the time I was there, you know. But again, I mean, you know, it took me telling them and really standing up for it as opposed to popping another pill, you know. So
you make such a good point there with a lot of things, but it's back to that being your own advocate. And the other thing about the pain pill is I'm with you on that, on OxyContin or any of those opioids. And that is often a first easy choice. We experienced some of that too when Max was going through treatment. And the other thing though is the whole, you knew what you needed and you asked for it and you received it. And I think that, you know, I've spent a lot of my career in healthcare, and I think patients not only advocating for themselves, but then having medical professionals, the nurse or the doctor, at least listen. They may disagree, but at least listen. And obviously what you asked for made sense, you know, in terms of dehydration and fluid. So I just, again, applaud you for that, because it's important to have that dialogue and to know what to ask for, I guess, too, or at least try.
Yeah, and you touched on something that, I mean, I think you're, you know, once I said that to the doctor up in Indiana, you know, he didn't push back, you know, and they were all on board. And, you know, Dr. Anthony, my guy at Pardee here in Hendersonville, I'm an oncologist here, you know, I commend him because he, you know, when the decision was made to go to Indiana, he deferred to Dr. Einhorn. He made himself fully available. I mean, I don't know how he found out, but one time I even kind of passed out in public and ended up in an ambulance, and it was like 10 o'clock at night and before I went to Indiana, and here Dr. Anthony calls me on my cell phone. And Chris, what happened? What's going on? I have no idea how he did that, how he found that out, you know, but I mean, yeah, the support and, you know, the willingness to listen and just desire to help. I felt very fortunate with the two two hospitals I worked with.
And the other point I'll make before we go on and talk about your golf tournament is simply for listeners and to find the right place to go for treatment, because there are certain medical centers at the country, the U.S. is what I'm talking about, and I'm sure in the rest of the world, where they have done like the surgeries that you had to have and the chemo. They have done it numerous, multiple hundreds of times, and they know what they're doing. And not everybody does. And like your experience when you checked out the UNC hospital, and not that it's a bad place to go, it's not. But for what you need, you being the cancer patient, you have to find the right place that has experience with it. So it's just hard, an editorial comment.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. And, you know, I know this isn't a political show, I'm not going to get into that, but, you know, what President Obama did by inserting that end where, you know, an insurance company right. cannot decline you now based on a pre-existing condition, I mean, it saved my life. Because yep. in the before times, I have zero doubt that I would have been declined all the way across the board. And, you know, here's a procedure that, you know, when I went up to Indiana, I mean, $2 million procedure by the time it's all said and done.
Wow.
You know, which obviously very few people can actually afford. I mean, they even gave me like a $10,000 credit card to where, you know, for flights and for hotels and stuff like that. So, you know, my wife could fly up and, you know, we could get a hotel in between hand and, you know, for food and stuff like that, you know, which, you know, I'm grateful, obviously.
Yeah.
I mean, that's something that was not, I would not have been able to get in the before times. So that's my little plug. Okay. Don't let your insurance go.
No, that's right. I agree. And I agree with you on what you've said about President Obama and the pre-existing condition situation. And it's wonderful to have that now. So
Yeah. Let's
go on to your golf tournament. You mentioned it earlier that your coworkers put that together while you were going through treatment. So tell us about the golf tournament and what's next mm-hmm. with that.
Yeah, so like you mentioned, it's a real estate firm in Asheville, North Carolina. It's called Modern Mountain Real Estate. And, you know, once I got through with everything, I was committed to kind of keep that golf tournament going. And so we've now done it three times after the one that was done for me. And each year, you know, we tend to average $12,000, $15,000 that we can raise in a day. I know a lot of business owners in town, you know, I work with a lot of people. And so, you know, what I do is I get them to sponsor the holes and, you know, I get a lot of, you know, prizes donated to create raffle prizes and drum up money that way. And of course, we'll drive around and sell a little booze to get everybody all loosened up and, uh-huh. you know, get their pockets opened up. And, you know, we hosted it this year at the Grove Park Inn, and which is a beautiful resort in Nashville. And we're going to be there again next year, October 1st. It will be the first Sunday in October. And it's just a really good time, you know, and everybody who's a part of it, they understand my, you know, what my journey was, and they understand that this is, you know, my way of paying it forward. And I'm grateful because, I mean, I even get other real estate firms, you know, and agents from other firms who come and are a part of it. So it's not about recognition for my firm, you know, it's about a patient. And, you know, each year I talk with, you know, the cancer center, and I try to get them to help me identify, you know, a family that is really kind of struggling. And, you know, typically it's a younger family. And yeah, it's one of those things that when it's all said and done, I deliver them a cashier's check and they can do what they want with it. And I hope that it brings some sort of relief during what I know can be a financially stressful time, along with all the emotional and physical aspects of the challenge as well.
That's wonderful. What a way to give back and to find that family. So we'll definitely have you come back and talk about that down the road with us about your tournament. So we talked about the tournament. What So for you, Chris, you personally or professionally, mm-hmm. what's next on your agenda for life, I guess?
Well, you know, like I said, I own a real estate firm in Nashville, and I've got about 23 agents who work with me. And, you know, my focus is with the firm is to, you know, be community centric. You know, we want to host events here at our office, you know, once a quarter, whether it's a pet adoption or a blood drive. It's a big focus for us. You know, I'm opening a property management division. This is a very vacation rental rich area. People love to come here and vacation. And so because of that, we've got a lot of those in our market. And yeah, my kids, my oldest son's 24. He's an electrician and out on his own. My 19-year-old's in Charlotte. And he's doing cybersecurity, working for Wells Fargo. And then I've got what's about to be a 17-year-old who's a junior in high school. So seeing him through and getting him graduated and traveling. I mean, I'm a travel junkie, so you know, I love to go. And so that's kind of it. Just hope that each quarter my blood results are good, and then I'll just keep moving forward.
Yeah. So last question, a fun one. What song, when you hear it, you have to sing along to it?
Simple Man by Lynyrd Skynyrd.
Okay.
That's one that when it comes on, I feel like if people will actually listen to the words, whether you're a man or a woman, I think there's some good advice in there, and it's always resonated with me.
Okay. I haven't heard that one yet. So I mean, in terms of people picking their songs, so that's good to know. So.
Well, I'm not the best singer, so.
It's me neither.
And I'm in the car by myself.
Yeah, me too. Well, you know, Chris, thanks for taking the time to do this and joining me on the podcast. And like I said, we'll have you come back as the golf tournament gets closer. And glad you're here and glad you're healthy. So thank you.
Joyce, thank you for doing this and helping to bring some more recognition to it. I truly don't think enough people realize how deadly testicular cancer is for young men, especially as you well know. And I don't think there's enough recognition on it. And I think, honestly, I think doctors, you know, I think back to all these, you know, sports checkups you go to, and they're checking you for a hernia or whatever, the old turn and cough. And, you know, I think doctors should be talking about this to boys. And I think they should be, you know, having that discussion with them and explaining what to look for, because, you know, as you well know, it will take the life of young men, very young men. And,
yes.
And I do think that it's something that if it were discussed and it were known, I think we could catch it a lot, you know, catch it quicker than what we do. So thank you for this, and I would be honored to help and assist with anything that you ever to help bring testicular cancer to the table for more people.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I really appreciate that, Chris. So
you're welcome.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Don't Give Up on Testicular Cancer. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe to our program on your favorite podcast directory. You can also visit the Max Mallory Foundation at www.maxmalloryfoundation.com/podcast to listen to previous podcast episodes or donate to the foundation. And join us again next time for another episode of Don't Give Up on Testicular Cancer.